Welcome to Torah Simecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Racheli Lufglass, and today we'll be studying Sefer Ezra, Perek Tet. Yesterday, we saw Ezra's journey was a resounding success. With the help of Hashem, he earned the support of the King Artaxerxes. He convinced Jewish leaders to accompany him. Then his fast and Tfilas HaDerech were very effective, apparently, and his group arrived safely in Yerushalayim. After he was very careful in appointing the Kohanim as stewards of the possessions that they were bringing to the Beit HaMikdash, those items were delivered safely and accounted for in the temple. Today, in Perek Tet, we're going to see the challenges which were awaiting Ezra upon his arrival. Interestingly, as we begin, Ezra arrives in Israel on the first of Av, which we saw in the last Perek, but the occurrences of this Perek are going to take place only 4 months later. So the question we have to ask ourselves is, what is going on for those 4 months? So let's just begin with the first two psukim, and then we'll take a break to kind of talk about what was going on. Pasuk Aleph tells us, Ukichalot Eila, when all of this finished, meaning the arrival and the emptying of all the vessels that they brought, Nikshu Eilai Hasarim, many of the officers approached me, says Ezra. And what do they tell him? Lo nivdilu ha'am Yisrael v'hakohanim v'halevi'im me'amei ha'aratzot. The Jewish people, the priests, the Levim, and the regular people have not separated themselves from the indigenous inhabitants of the land. They are following after the behaviors, the evil behaviors of the other nations. Kinasu mibnotehem lahem, by marrying the daughters of the other nations into them. Ulivnehem vihit arvu, and they're allowing their sons to marry out. Vihit arvu zera kodesh, and they have mixed, so to speak, the holy seed, the Ameha Aratzot, with the indigenous people. The Yad Hasarim, and the hands of the officers, the aristocracy, the Hasganim Haitab Mal Hazerishona, the first people to do this wrong were the people of the higher levels of society. And the word used here for the wrong is the word Ma'al, which is really a form of a breach, of some kind of a betrayal. So what's going on for the last 4 months that Ezra only seems to be finding out about this? So in truth, Ezra was accomplishing the two goals he had set out for himself. He really finds a very bad social religious situation that the Jews are in right now. And the roots of this were really to be found in the lack of Torah knowledge. He really had come to explain the Torah on the basis of the learning that he had done with his teacher back in Bavel, who was Baruch ben Neriah. And through doing this, he was laying the groundwork for the attack on assimilation, on intermarriage. And it would be really surprising if Ezra didn't know about this situation until 4 months into his stay. Probably he did realize it, but he didn't do anything about it until he felt like he laid the groundwork for the people in order for him to be effective. He needed the courts to work out any yichus, lineage questions. He needed the power to assemble all the people in Yerushalayim to kind of embrace them and let them know how he feels. It really seems like he was successful in arousing that, because we're going to see in Perek Yud that the initiative to make changes is actually going to come from the people. And in fact, even here in our Perek, it seems like the people are approaching him with the issue. It's not that he sought them out. So it's not all really missing information. But the truth is, 58 years have transpired from the time that they completed the Beit HaMikdash in 516 until this year, 458, when he arrives on the scene in Israel. And we can probably deduce that the generation who was involved in the initial building of the second Beit HaMikdash had already passed away. And this new generation didn't hold the same religious convictions as the original settlers. They didn't appreciate the gravity of what their role would be as the chosen people are given a second chance to inhabit this land. And potentially that complacency led to this type of a situation, and they really intermarried with all the inhabitants. So the question is, why is intermarriage so bad? If the purpose of this aliyah is to develop a religious, spiritual community in Israel based on laws, unlike, let's say, the aliyah of Zerubbabel, which was about building the Beis HaMikdash, then the two purposes are really very interconnected. Building the Beit HaMikdash is to provide a place for Hashem's presence to rest in Israel. But intermarriage is a sin which is going to cause the divine presence to leave the Jews altogether. And obviously the resting place of the Beit HaMikdash, which would make it a moot point. And I think one of the things that's most troubling here is that it's the aristocracy that seems to be the main offenders. And one of the words that are used here is that they ruin the Zera Kodesh, the holy seed. Ezra, as we're going to see in his reaction, is going to extend the prohibition of intermarriage that was taught in Sefer Devarim over there, it was really referring only to the seven nations of Canaan. But Ezra is going to argue that since the behavior of the indigenous population is similar to that of the seven nation, the same intermarriage prohibition applies. And you should know, it's not just Ezra that's going to deal with it. And all the books of Shiva Tzion somehow see this as an underlying problem. Certainly Nehemiah is going to have it, and Malachi, the last Navi we ever have, is definitely going to have it. But this concern that Ezra has is something that he's not fighting alone. It is a problem, unfortunately, with the people when they return. So now let's see what Ezra's reaction is. Pasuk Gimel. And when I heard about this thing, I tore my clothes and my outer coat, and I ripped off my hair, and I pulled out my beard, and I sat on the ground feeling desolate. And to me, when I was on the floor, many people who were trembling with their fear before God came to me to speak to me about this terrible behavior of the Jews from the diaspora. And I simply sat feeling desolate ad leminchat ha'erev, until the end of the day. Ubiminchat ha'erev, and mincha time towards the evening, kamti mita aniti, I got up from my fast. So we see that even Ezra, there's like a time frame, of kind of being in this melancholy state, and afterwards you have to be more solution oriented, not just focus inwardly on the morning. Ubikari bigdi, I got up from my torn clothes, umiili ve'echra el barkai, and I bent down on my knees, ve'efresa kapai, and I lifted up my hands, el Hashem elokei kai, to Hashem my God, ve'omra, and I said. So starting here in Pasuk Vav, for quite some time until Pasuk Tetvav, really the end of the Perek, Ezra now begins a tremendous prayer where he really goes through the history of the Jewish people and comes up with a couple of ideas. And it's interesting, before we start the prayer that of Ezra, is to note that in the Dan Mikra, Rav Zarkavod really contrasts the two leaders of the time. He looks at Ezra as being a man who wears his heart on his sleeve, as we're going to see. And he's going to see Nehemiah as more of the stoic leader, almost as if he's carrying a big stick. Now note that Ezra really is going to initiate his response. After his initial response of tearing his clothes and mourning and weeping on the floor, his first response is really that of tefillah, of prayer. Rav Soloveitchik in The Lonely Man of Faith says that the connection that the Jewish people have to God through prophecy, through nevuah, is now going to be transferred to tefillah. And that is why formal, public tefillah was established at this time period by Ezra and the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, the men of the Great Assembly, kind of to let us know that Hashem is not going to speak to us anymore, but we will still be able to continue to speak to Him. And therefore, prayer and fasting is a really recurring response to stress during all of these different events of Shivat Tzion. Okay, so now let's look at his tefillah, starting Pasuk Vav. Va'umra. Elokai, Hashem, boshti v'nechlamti, I am embarrassed and I am ashamed. Malbim says that tells us that he's both embarrassed for himself and also ashamed from the way other people are looking at them, that they are not being a light unto the nations. Laharim elokai panai lecha, I cannot lift my face to you, ki avonotenu ravu l'mala, because our sin is so great, v'ashmatenu gadla ad l'shamayim, and our blame is higher than the heavens. So note that throughout his entire tefillah, Ezra is going to be exceptionally inclusive, always using the suffix at the end of his words of anachnu, and we, and we, and we. He doesn't ever want to point a finger that this is a Jewish person problem outside of him, but it includes him as well. And he does feel this deep guilt. He's going to mention this word ashma, guilt, four times, and invoking that root word many times in the course of his confession, in which he poses himself. I think that probably this gut reaction, this gut-wrenching tefillah that we're going to see, is a direct result of his spontaneous response of tearing his clothes. And this tefillah that he's going to go through now arises really from the fact that even though, as you're going to see, there was intermarriage, he wasn't necessarily aware that it started in the higher ups of the people. And the fact that nobody else was doing anything about it, or even it looks like they condoned it, and that realization really hits him when he receives the report. And I think that's potentially why he responds the way he does. So let me continue with the tefillah, Pasuk Zion. He goes through an entire history of the time period. pardon the noise in the background, I'm sorry. He goes through a history of the time period, about all the things that the Jewish people have done wrong through all the different generations, and that goes through quite a few psukim. And then in Pasuk Yud, he starts to say, what can we do about this, Hashem? What can we possibly do? Ki azavnu mitzvotecha. We have left your mitzvot. Asher tzivita b'yad avadecha, that you have commanded us. Ha'aretz asher atem ba'im l'rishta, the land that you're coming to, Eretz Nidahi. It's a land of Nida. Nida doesn't necessarily mean impure. It means a land of like limbo, like from the word nad neda, seesaw, that the Jewish people are often in limbo with the land because of their behavior. Hi benidat amer atzot, because we're following in the behaviors of the other nations. Pasuk Yubet, v'atab notechem al titnu levnehem, we were told not to allow our children to intermarry, v'lo tidreshu shlomam, and not to seek out their peace and get too close with them, l'man techzeku v'achaltem etuvar, so that we can eat of the good of the land, v'horashtem levnehem, and inherit the land for our children forever. V'acharei kol haba aleinu b'maseinu harev, and after all of our behaviors and all of our guilt, ki ata alokeinu chasachta, You allowed us to remain. And you let us come back to Israel now, still with our refugees, when you could have really, you know, wiped us out from all of the sins that we did. And we went back again, and we went against your mitzvot, and we married into the other peoples. It seems like Ezra is really intentionally modeling his confession after another confessor, so to speak, of sin, and that is of Daniel. Both Daniel and Ezra engaged in fasting and in prayer until nighttime. Both of them tell us that the Jewish people seem to be spurning all of their earlier Nevi'im, who had spoken both to kings and to princes, and both of them really invoke the language of the word Ma'al, which is a betrayal of Hashem. Despite the similarities, there are very big differences between the declaration of Ezra and that of Daniel. Most obvious is that prophesizing during the period between the two Batei Mikdash, Daniel was really davening for the second Beit HaMikdash to be rebuilt. And he uses the term Ashma, guilt, to refer to Jerusalem's sorry state at the time. Ezra, on the other hand, makes the opposite point, confessing that despite the gift awarded them, the Jews have remained sinful to God. And the last pasuk of his prayer, in pasuk tedvav, Ezra says, Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Hashem our God, tzadikata, you are righteous, ki nisharnu pleita, you allowed us to have this remnant, kahayom hazeh, on this day, hinenu lefanecha ba'ashmatenu, behold, we are before you in our guilt, ki ein la'amod lefanecha azot, and we really shouldn't be standing before you about all with all this. So, to kind of summarize Ezra's tefillah, his own description of his reaction really speaks a great deal about the enormity of what the Jewish people had done. Their intermarriage undermined the entire essence of their return to Israel. And Ezra, as he begins through the physical actions of tearing his clothes and ripping his hair out and sitting in isolation, he really commences with his davening by showing his grief and shame. He then continued to daven, describing the destruction that Hashem had brought to the Jews because of their sins, whether it was the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash and then sending the Jews people into exile. He continued his tefillah, explaining how they were given a fresh start and Hashem gave them a remnant, and then still they once again went against God, even though he provided them with so much and given them a foundation for the reestablishment of their nation. And that fresh start is what, once again, they are now betraying. And ultimately, despite God's mercy, we keep disobeying Hashem. And ultimately, Ezra concludes with the reproof of a very terrifying deduction, that it would really be okay for Hashem to completely destroy this remnant because we don't deserve anything anymore because of our intermarriage. What is shockingly missing from his entire tefillah are two things. Never once does he ask Hashem for forgiveness, and never once does he promise to deal with it. And that's just how he finishes the perek. And tomorrow, as we learn Perek Yud, we'll see what happens, you know, as a reaction, so to speak, to Ezra's confessing before God. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmas, Rose Foreman, Reza Rachel Bat Aryeh Leib, and Rachel Zeitlin, Rachel Bat Shlomo.